exposed by these journalists, and you become an enemy.
Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Hungary, India, Azerbaijan, Mexico, and Rwanda are the states that have been accused of purchasing the controversial software, with allegations that the hacking device was used on the phone of Saudi dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi before he was hacked to pieces inside a Saudi consulate in Istanbul back in 2018. Khashoggi's close friends were also believed to have their phones surveilled soon after his murder.
And in Khashoggi's case, this is clear. What he was doing is to expose the dirty things happening in Saudi Arabia, but obviously the kingdom and also the regime, the establishment, is not happy. And when an establishment is not happy, obviously they have all the resources to keep you quiet or to get rid of you.
If these allegations are proven to be true, it will indicate surveillance on a global level from Budapest to Riyadh that is not only a major world crime, but also an attack on the principle of holding authoritarian states to account. Ahmed Kibala, London.
Bilateral ties between Pakistan and a beleaguered government in Kabul have witnessed another low after Kabul recalled its ambassador and other senior diplomats from Islamabad, citing security concerns. It happened after the daughter of Afghan envoy to Islamabad was briefly kidnapped and released. The incident, according to police, happened during her back-and-forth movements on several cabs she herself hired for her travel between Islamabad and nearby city of Rawalpindi. The diplomatic row has preceded extraordinary territorial gains by Taliban, who now claim to have taken over 85% of Afghan territory following the exit of almost all US-led NATO troops from Afghanistan. Kabul has blamed Islamabad to have done little to contain the movements of Afghan Talibans from its nearly 2,700-kilometer-long porous border.
Networks and organizations supporting the Taliban are openly celebrating the destruction of the assets and capabilities of the Afghan people and state. Also, we call on Pakistan to use its influence and leverage for peace and cessation of hostilities.
Islamabad has repeatedly accused President Ashraf Ghani's government and India together to have provided sanctuaries in Afghanistan to anti-Pakistan terrorists who killed tens of thousands of people in this part of the world over the years.
No country has tried harder to get Taliban on the dialogue table than Pakistan. We have made every effort, short of taking military action against Taliban and Pakistan, we have made every effort to get them on the dialogue table and to have a peaceful settlement there. To blame Pakistan for what is going on in Afghanistan, I feel, is extremely unfair. Why would they listen to us when they are sensing victory?
Pakistani officials say that Taliban listen to them, but they do not control them. And over the years, Islamabad has lost significant influence on them. However, Kabul is not willing to accept this argument, given the ongoing military campaign by the Taliban, recapturing districts after districts with little resistance from the security forces in neighboring Afghanistan. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Palestinian national and Islamic groups in the Gaza Strip held a gathering near the separation fence to slam Israel for stalling the flow of goods to the enclave. Attended by a number of Palestinian resistance leaders, the gathering voiced a resistance refusal of the Israeli attempts to provoke Palestinian outrage by widening the current blockade on the crossings connecting Gaza to the outside world.
This is a message to the Israeli regime to stop swaggering anger among Palestinians by imposing further restrictions on the reconstruction process in Gaza after latest escalation. What happened during the escalation might happen again, and the resistance is ready to defend Palestinians' rights under any condition. This inhumane siege is unacceptable. Our economy is already collapsed and things here are not bearable anymore.
Palestinian resistance called mediators and international community to redouble efforts to pressurize Israel into removing especially its restriction on building materials and construction work. The Israeli strikes displaced nearly 80,000 Gazans, including children, and destroyed 17,000 homes.
This Israeli blockade has negatively affected all aspects of life in Gaza. It has brought only further poverty and unemployment. Israeli regime is punishing our civilians twice, first by destroying their homes and second by denying reconstruction materials to them.
Palestinian resistance has warned that the new pressure by Israel will intensify the current tensions. They say are considering all options to break the siege.
It is unacceptable for Palestinians to remain silent towards this inhumane blockade that has only increased the poverty rate in Gaza. We call on the international bodies to put pressure on Israel to end this blockade. International community must stand for the humanity principles which have been violated by Israel in Gaza.
Israel imposed its suffocating siege on Gaza in 2007 after Hamas took control of the enclave in an election. Palestinians here say the delay in construction will affect the economic situation of Palestinian families, especially those who've lost their homes, by pushing up poverty rates. They also stress that the Israeli moves to impede the construction work in Gaza might trigger fresh violence. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
On the day of Arafat, Yemen Scholars Association held a symposium in the Great Mosque of Sana'a. The symposium entitled Preventing Hajj is a Deterrent from the Grand Mosque and the Service to the Nation's Enemies denounced the Saudi regime's ban on foreigners from Hajj. A large number of Yemeni scholars attended the event.
This move serves the Zionist interests. There is a great conspiracy against Muslims. The Saudi regime has deviated from the path of Islam. All Muslims must get united to protect their sanctities against the Zionist plots.
The Scholars Association issued a statement accusing the Saudi regime of serving the Zionist agenda by targeting Muslims' rights. The statement also condemned the silence of the Islamic nations toward the Saudi practices against Islam.
The decision to ban millions of Muslims from Hajj pilgrimage is in line with the colonial projects. The colonial powers seek to change the nature of Islamic sites. We condemn and deplore the silence of the Islamic countries around the world towards the deliberate targeting of Islamic sanctities. We call on all Muslims to condemn what the Saudi regime is doing.
For the second year, Saudi Arabia prevented millions of Muslims from holding Hajj pilgrimage, saying this step comes amid the precautions against the COVID-19 pandemic, whilst thousands of people attend music concerts in Riyadh and Jeddah without any restrictions.
Yemenis believe that the Saudi regime is deliberately targeting the rights of Muslims, including the Hajj, as part of implementing the Israeli agenda in the region. They say Saudi Arabia has no right to ban millions of Muslims from their right to access Holy Mecca. Abdulatif al-Washali, Sana'a.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Germany is asking itself how one of the world's richest countries managed to be taken by surprise by last week's extreme weather events, as more details emerge of how early warnings about record rainfall and expected floods did not make their way to the communities most at risk. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Philip Altman. The piece is titled German Flood Alert System Criticized for Monumental Failure. Germany is asking itself how one of the world's richest countries managed to be taken by surprise by last week's extreme weather events. As more details emerge of how early warnings about record rainfall and expected floods did not make their way to the communities most at risk. In Erftstadt, south of Cologne, where a flooded gravel quarry swallowed up cars, houses and parts of a historic castle, residents who had installed the federal government's weather warning app were advised on Wednesday, 14th of July, to stay inside their houses. By Thursday, 15th of July, they were informed that a nearby dam was at risk of breaking, putting them in extreme danger. Yet, in the Ahrweiler district in the state of Rhineland-Palatinate, where at least 117 people died after torrents of rainwater collected in the surrounding Eifel Mountains and then tore through several villages last Wednesday. The NINA warning app had not sent out a comparable warning, the German news agency Deutsche Presseagentur reported on Monday, 19th of July. Even though the European Flood Awareness System, IFAS, sent out specific warnings for the worst-hit German regions 4 days before the start of the downpour, the ensuing flash floods still appeared to have taken the majority of residents by surprise. Professor Hannah Cloke, a hydrologist at the University of Reading in England, who set up and advises IFAS, told the Politico website the death toll was a monumental failure of the system. The German Interior Minister Horst Seehofer dismissed suggestions that federal officials had made mistakes and said warnings were passed on to local authorities who make decisions on disaster protection. The German Interior Minister in the western state of North Rhine-Westphalia, Herbert Ruhl, where 47 people died, conceded that the early warning system had not worked as efficiently as it could have, but said he did not see any fundamental problems with the system. A spokesperson for Herbert Ruhl's ministry on Monday, 19th of July, said it had passed on warnings to the local municipalities concerned. Head of Germany's Federal Office of Civic Protection and Disaster Assistance appeared to shift the blame to local authorities. The warning infrastructure as such wasn't our problem, but the question of how sensitive the public authorities and the population are in their response, said the agency's president, Armin Schuster. Armin Schuster told broadcaster Deutschlandfunk that digital warnings such as low warning apps, text messages or emails did not always reach all those at risk. Instead, he called for an investment program to increase the number of flood warning sirens in areas that could see more floods in the coming years. The Disaster Assistance Agency has been facing scrutiny since last year's Nationwide Emergency Warning Day, the first test run of the country's warning infrastructure since reunification in 1991. Slated to run for 20 minutes, the event on 10th of September 2020 was meant to demonstrate the functionality of everything from sirens to push notifications on smartphones. Instead, the warning day demonstrated the current system's gaps, with many receiving push alerts with a delay or not at all after the nationwide push overloaded the system. Annalena Baerbock, the Green Party's candidate for chancellor at elections this September, told Der Spiegel magazine that the appropriate response to the catastrophic floods was a tripartite national effort of strength involving a more centralized disaster management system, readjusting the design of cities and rivers for the event of more extreme weather events, and increased efforts on climate protection. We need to reshape disaster management, Annalena Baerbock said. and the federal government needs to take more responsibility for it. As receding water levels lay bare the full extent of the damage in towns and villages in western Germany, residents feared they could be left without access to electricity and drinking water for months. In our wider district, about 30,000 are currently without electricity, drinking water, and gas, after Wednesday's flash floods broke up sewage systems, tore through a major gas pipeline, and brought a purification plant to a standstill. It looks like the infrastructure is destroyed so badly that some places won't have drinking water for weeks or even months. The mayor of the town of Altena in Cornelia Weingand told the newspaper Bild. It is clear that our community will end up looking very different because those buildings that defined the area for more than 50 or 100 or 150 years will have to be torn down. Even water towers in parts of the area that were spared the worst of the floods had run dry and had to be refilled either through tank lorries or by reviving disused wells and setting up mobile water treatment units, local media reported on Monday. Germany's Red Cross has transported 2 7,000-litre and 4 3,800-litre tanks of drinking water into the region. The Koblenz-based energy provider EVM said it was still in the process of establishing exactly how many households in Ahrweiler district were without gas, which is used to heat water and homes in the region, but that the damage to its supply system was dramatic.
The Spotlight.
An Israeli spyware has been used to spy on human rights activists and journalists worldwide. It has also targeted the phones of French, Iraqi, and Moroccan leaders, among others. The obvious question is whether this was done with the knowledge of Israeli authorities or not. In this edition of The Spotlight, we'll look at how this spying software was used by dictatorial regimes like the UAE and Saudi Arabia, in which, in the case of Saudi Arabia, the Crown Prince used it to spy on slain dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
How safe are our mobile phones? This is a question many activists and journalists have been pondering for some time now, and according to an investigation by 17 media organizations, it appears that many of their worst fears have been confirmed.
Their investigation found that human rights activists, journalists, and lawyers across the world were targeted by authoritarian states using hacking software sold by Israeli surveillance company NSO Group. The spyware, referred to as Pegasus, acts as malware, infecting mobile phones, enabling operators to extract crucial information and secretly activate microphones.
Press TV spoke to global security expert Alex Okoman about what all this means.
So they're not just tracking criminals, but they're also tracking any professionals who are doing the job professionally, but the fear of being exposed by these journalists, and you become an enemy.
Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Hungary, India, Azerbaijan, Mexico, and Rwanda are the states that have been accused of purchasing the controversial software, with allegations that the hacking device was used on the phone of Saudi dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi before he was hacked to pieces inside a Saudi consulate in Istanbul back in 2018. Khashoggi's close friends were also believed to have their phones surveilled soon after his murder.
And in Khashoggi's case, this is clear. What he was doing is to expose the dirty things happening in Saudi Arabia, but obviously the kingdom and also the regime, the establishment, is not happy. And when an establishment is not happy, obviously they have all the resources to keep you quiet or to get rid of you.
If these allegations are proven to be true, it will indicate surveillance on a global level from Budapest to Riyadh that is not only a major world crime, but also an attack on the principle of holding authoritarian states to account. Ahmed Kibala, London.
Our guest joining us for this edition of The Debate, we have Richard Becker, who joins us, who's a member of ACT Now to Stop War and End Racism. We also have Elijah Magnier, who's a veteran war zone correspondent and political analyst with over 35 years of experience covering West Asia and also North Africa. All right, let me first come to you, Elijah Magnier. Let's review what this software is and its purpose. It's an Israeli company, NSO. It's made a software that's called Pegasus. And Pegasus is a malware, according to the description given, that infects iOS and Android devices, which enables the operators of that to extract messages, to extract photos, emails, to record calls, and secretly, and that's the key word there, activate the microphones and also activate the cameras. So based on that, isn't it safe to conclude that the purpose of this software is spying or surveilling?
Thank you for having me. I spoke to different European experts in security, and I've been told that this spyware, malware, exists since many years. And what is not said in the report distributed or released recently is every single European country has it. And every single European country needs to seek a permission from Israel to give it to another state, even if it is a friendly state. Without the permission of Israel, this can't happen. So every single European country is not only spying on its citizens, but is spying on the same European and non-European leaders. And the problem of this, this spying program is it turns the phone on, even if you switch your phone off, and it turns the camera, it's a GPS, it indicates the location, it downloads the email, all the messages, all the voice messages, written messages. Even when you talk, this can be exactly copied by this software and sent to the surveillance agency. And there is more than one surveillance agency in every country who can tap into use this software and use it against their citizens. Therefore, more than one agency has this spying device that is used not only against journalists, but against everyone who is considered interesting for the security services. And that's a clear violation of human rights, clear violation of the privacy, and it is just destroy the word of democracy and freedom of expression here. And what is more serious about it is every single European country knows about it and is aware of its presence and is also knowledgeable that other countries are using it. And when these are using it against heads of state, we learned that even Macron's phone, the French president, was under surveillance. And we also know that heads of state and prime ministers in the Middle East, each one was under the scrutiny of a secret service in one country or another. So basically, everything is exposed. And the last bit here is there is no phone that is not breakable, including what iPhone was saying, that the latest phone is really very solid. Detected, and this turned out to be a lie.
Uh-huh. Well, Richard Becker, so we can then conclude that this spyware was used to target journalists. Aside from what Elijah Magnier has said, you have a consortium of 17 media outlets, activists, researchers who have found this really company software to target, as our guest there, Elijah Magnier, said, the smartphones of these activists and journalists and executives, and of course some of those leaders includes 10 prime ministers. So can we establish that at this point to say that it's no longer an allegation, this is indeed true?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that it's true. I mean, there is an agreement among multiple prominent media in the world and organizations that have investigated this. And so the denials that come from the NSO in the state of Israel, that their program has been used to identify, to follow, target, to surveil people, rings very hollow. This is something that the state of Israel has obviously used program or very similar programs. And one way you can know that is that when Israel carries out its bombing of Gaza, which is defenseless against that bombing, but when they do, very often, not all the time, but sometimes, they call up the people who are in a building that's going to be struck and tell them, you have 10 minutes to get out, we're going to bomb. It appears that Israel has created through either this surveillance program or very, very similar ones, the capacity to identify virtually where everyone is in Palestinian areas of the state or in the West Bank and Gaza, East Jerusalem, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, there's so much behind this that I'd like to break open. And Elijah Magnier, one of the things that I'd like to find out from you, if I can, you know, the company itself says that it vets the buyers of this, despite the fact that we have seen how this has been sold to regimes that have poor human track records. Elijah Magnier, are you with us? Okay, let me go to you, Richard Becker. So when it says that it does that, we know that the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia have purchased this. Now, this is where it gets interesting, because the million-dollar question here, Richard Becker, is the fact if Israel is actually involved here. I mean, based on what has been disclosed, Israel does play a role in terms of the clients that this company can sell its software to. And multiple sources have actually corroborated that the fact that they pushed for Saudi Arabia to be added to the list of the customers. And it says that the group actually did not want to pursue Saudi Arabia any longer as a client or the UAE. Do you agree with that?
I'm not sure where that's coming from, but it's, you know, we can see that the UAE, which Israel has just very triumphantly opened relations with, despite it, you know, it's really something I just have to say parenthetically. United Arab Emirates is a country of about 11 million people, and about 10 million of them are forbidden ever to become citizens of that country. And it's a police state. And the idea that they're not using this kind of equipment to track opponents is belied by the fact that we have that the ruler of Dubai and the prime minister of the United Arab Emirates just sent commandos, you know, very recently to capture his daughter, who didn't want to live under that kind of a system and escape, and they found her using this technology, either her own phone or the phone of some of her aides in international waters, and brought her back, and she, you know, so she's suffering from that. I mean, a lot of people are suffering probably much worse fates than she has so far. But I think that particular case shows that, you know, that it makes it clear that this equipment, this program has been supplied to the UAE. And also it seems quite clear that it's been supplied to the another extremely repressive government where there's no freedoms for people, and that's the government of Saudi Arabia.
Well, Elijah Magnier, let me ask you this, because we have to establish this, and it's very confusing somewhat that you have this software company that's based out of Israel, and this is where the line is a little bit blurred. And I'd like to find out from you, based on that French organization that revealed, that studied this case and investigated it and revealed some of the facts that we have in this conversation right now, that Israel and its officials were actually choosing the clients for the software. It was saying, you have to sell it to Saudi Arabia, you have to sell it to the UAE. And it says that the software company says it wasn't even up to us. We don't want to sell it to authoritarian regimes, but Israeli officials were making us do that. So does that show intent from Israel to have these regimes like UAE and Saudi Arabia use the device to spy on journalists, politicians, etc.? Is Israel guilty?
This is a very good question. There are many points here. The first point is this company has been established in 2010. The revelation that there is a spyware developed by Israel and offered to European and non-European countries came out in 2016. This is indicate that Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, have already established good relationship with Israel to be given spyware that is highly sophisticated. However, the other side of this spyware is whatever the countries are spying on, it is again related to the same company who can collect the same data. So basically, to explain better, Israel is providing this spyware, but it is in a position to collect the data that each country with the authorization to use the spyware, and this country is collecting the information. This information is also shared with Israel. Therefore, Israel is collecting a bank of information that is huge, coming from different countries who are supposed to be friendly countries, because they need an authorization from Israel to release it. This is when I talked to security officers. They told me that we are not entitled to give it to any other country without the permission of Israel. So there is no secret here. The Israelis are willingly giving this spyware to countries they consider friendly, with whom they also share data. So these countries like Saudi Arabia and the Emirates, they are sharing the spyware data, spy information, and collecting data and giving it also to Israel.
So, Richard Becker, I'm guessing that there's something illegal about this. I would think that that's a conclusion that can be made here. And therefore, based on that, what can be done? I mean, I'm not sure what word to use when I ask the question, what can be done, when we're looking at countries like the U.S., France, and U.K. selling arms to these same regimes that are killing people in Yemen, for example, and yet we have here a case where it's still continuing to this day.
Well, it's really something. I mean, it's outrageous what's happening. There has to be an outcry from people in many countries against this, and a demand that it end. But it probably will not end. It's probably going to continue. I mean, just today, I think Israel is now functioning kind of like a 21st century Sparta. There's reports today that all the top officers from all the military services in the U.S. are in Utah, and they've gathered there in Utah to see a demonstration of a new loitering drone, loitering weapon that Israel has developed, and apparently was used in by the Azerbaijani forces in the war against Armenia. And this weapon also has what they call a very high degree of autonomy, meaning that it may kill on its own. It has the capacity to do that without getting orders. But this is what's happening. This is what contributions to the world that we're getting, not only from Israel, but from other weapons manufacturers and surveillance manufacturers, but particularly coming from Israel, are some of the most advanced forms of surveillance and weaponry to the detriment of people in the world. And people should know this. They should know that this is what's happening. And also, one other connection, I believe that this firm, the NSO firm, is owned by an equity fund based in New York. So there's another connection, a big connection. That's who the company's real owners are.
Yeah, indeed, that's actually a great topic for another edition of the Spotlight here. Okay, so so we've covered that, Elijah, to some length. But then you have the other issue that's involved here, and it involves, not to bring up Saudi Arabia and the UAE so much, but that, again, I'm basing this on the report by Citizen Lab, where it said that they have been using this software extensively, and based on the report that I'm reading over here, it said that the usage was actually significantly to have increased between the years 2016 and August of 2018. And the increase was used to spy on their own citizens. Why do you think that the UAE and Saudi Arabia would need to use this software that's powerful in so many ways on their own citizens?
That's a very good question. Because the regimes are fragile, and because there is no democracy in the country, and because anyone that belongs to the opposition or voices an opposition voice is immediately taken in prison and condemned harshly. So these countries need to spy on their citizen to make sure that they can oppress any opposition group or individual who they think it represents a danger to the national security of the country. Therefore, we again talking about spying illegally, and there is no freedom of expression in these countries. Inevitably, they need to know what's happening and who's against or with the regime. And also they need to know who is in contact with whom abroad. And this is again a share of information, of intelligence information between states who very much know that this state is spying on citizens, and the information is shared with democratic state in Western countries, knowingly that this information has been obtained illegally. Now, the best way to avoid it, and that was amusing when you ask it, is simply not to carry a smartphone.
I'll never forget the headline that I read, Richard Becker. This is going back quite some time, in which the CIA said, based on the headline, "We're going to spy on you through your refrigerator," in which it said household appliances like dishwashers or ovens, stereo and TVs, can be used to spy. Is spying then just the norm? Is spying on whether it's UAE, Saudi Arabia, or the U.S. on citizens something that needs to be done in order for there to be a watch on the citizens of these countries?
Well, you know, I don't think it's just those countries either. I think that if we really look at the United States, right, the most powerful country in the world, there's crisis after crisis after crisis, and often multiple crises taking place at the same time. That's the truth of the matter, and it's really the system that exists in the world today, and the inequality that exists in the world today, is outrageous. It's beyond description. You have four individuals in the United States who have as much wealth as the bottom 165 million people. That's not a sustainable situation. So I think that we're going to see, I think the reality is that the governments from Saudi Arabia to the United Arab Emirates to Israel to the United States to France, they're all going to rely increasingly on surveillance and repression. These systems have to be changed. It cannot go on like this. These are, you know, the systems that are really destroying the world and destroying the rights of people all over the world. But I think they're going to rely on this, and we have to find the ways to organize, and that's taking place, to bring about a new system.
Final question goes to you, Elijah Magnier. You know, when we take a look at the result of what has happened in some sense out of this surveillance, if you want to call it that, we have to bring up the case of Jamal Khashoggi, in which Saudi Arabia used this software and obviously gathered data and information on him, of which we know obviously what the end result of that was. So that has happened. We still have Saudi Arabia and this company is to cooperate with each other, or for Saudi Arabia to continue using its software. What is it going to take so this doesn't happen? I mean, Saudi Arabia is still on a path of trying to silence dissent of its critics.
There is no way to stop it, unfortunately, because every country is using it under the title combating terrorism. And to combat terrorism, they say we need to tap phones and listen to people if they represent a danger against us. Well, that can be stopped only if every single decision is taken by a justice system, and the justice system is independent. Unfortunately, we don't have that system. Therefore, surveillance will continue, and arresting people because of what they said, depending on the person listening or the software that is collecting the information and consider this as a potential target, this is going to continue in every single country with this spyware or with other developed spyware.
Okay, we're going to end it there. Thank you very much, Elijah Magnier, veteran war zone correspondent and political analyst with over 35 years of experience covering West Asia and North Africa. Thank you for your contribution. Richard Becker, thank you. Member of Act Now to Stop War and End Racism from the Answer Coalition. And with Thanks. That, we come to an end of this edition of The Spotlight. From Ikaba Tafwe, it's goodbye until next time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
After criticisms over disproportionate and heavy-handed decisions to place EU nationals without the correct paperwork for entry into the United Kingdom in immigration removal centres for days, the Home Office has issued new guidance to its border force. We're prepared for you an article written by Brexit correspondent Lisa O'Carroll under the heading UK like an enemy state to EU nationals detained by border force. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. EU citizens living and working in the United Kingdom have revealed how they are being met with suspicion and threats that they will be refused entry at the UK border for the first time in their lives, fueling fresh fears that border force officials have not been trained in the new Brexit rules. Wolfgang, a German national who runs an IT business, was detained at Heathrow Airport despite having proof of settled status, indefinite leave to remain, and a British passport on the way. He is furious that his rights were suspended on the whim of a border force official. He said, "I have settled status," adding, "I have indefinite leave to remain. I'm about to become a British citizen. How is it that a border official with one tick can suspend those rights?" Wolfgang said from Germany, "To be blunt, I'm avoiding coming back to the United Kingdom now until I get my British passport," adding, "I pay a large amount of tax there. I have never used the health service. I contribute to Britain's economy, and I'm a property owner. Referring to the fact that the government has voted against giving EU citizens a residency card to show employers, landlords, or border officials, he said, "London is my favourite city, but I have no documents to show I can stay there." Wolfgang added, "They need to provide a document that guarantees that this is an irrevocable status, unless you have some sort of major criminal offence." Hilary Benn, a Labour MP and a former chair of the now disbanded Commons Brexit Select Committee, said cases such as Wolfgang's raise concern about what is in store for the 4.9 million EU citizens who have already been granted settled or pre-settled status, especially as they start to return from visits to their countries of birth when COVID restrictions are lifted. Hilary Benn added, "It's worrying to hear of these incidents happening. The Home Office needs to make sure that all Border Force staff are fully trained in applying the new rules." Referring to a new Brexit body set up in January to protect EU citizens' rights, Ben added, "This is something that the Independent Monitoring Authority needs to look at. Among the other cases is that of Antonio, a Spanish airline worker who was made to wait for 45 minutes at Gatwick whilst border officials tried to decide if he was lying when he told them he had pre-settled status. He said, "My passport was not associated with the settled status. When I told them that is because I applied using my ID card, which was perfectly acceptable to the Home Office, they told me that ID cards are no longer acceptable at the border." He was only let through after he produced his airline ID and his flight attendant schedule to prove he was not an illegal migrant. He said, "Because of my job, I have flown to many destinations and I have been through border controls in different countries. I felt I had landed in some random enemy state." He added, "This is the first time I felt intimidated by a police officer asking me questions just for being a foreigner living in the United Kingdom." For new arrivals with work visas, it is not plain sailing either. One Italian man arriving for a new job at a top British bank was confronted with officials unsure of the rules when he landed at London City Airport. Marco was detained for hours whilst border officials, who had refused his request to stamp the arrival date on his passport, pondered over a letter from his lawyer telling him he needed the official marking on his passport in order to take up his new job. Marco said, "I was escorted to a waiting room. After almost 3 hours, I was called by an officer who explained to me that it was a bit of a grey area, as my visa had been issued in electronic form and no guidance had been given by the government on how this would be formally recognised or recorded on one's passport." When he arrived at his new job, the first thing the Human Resource Department required was the stamp on his passport for their right to work check. Marco's case is one of half a dozen brought to the attention of The Guardian, which has reported how another cohort of EU citizens, those arriving to visit or to look for work, have been handcuffed, locked up, and had personal belongings removed from them before being deported. Colin Yeo, an immigration barrister and author of the Free Movement blog, said, "This is just how borders work, and this has been happening to everyone else from outside the European Union and is now just being applied to EU citizens. The whole point of free movement was to remove friction at the border. To deliberately reintroduce it was bound to have consequences." He said, "How Border Force is going to cope with this is hard to see. It is a huge job reimposing full controls between Britain and the European Union." The Home Office said it was unable to investigate the reports as it had not been provided details of the alleged persons involved. A spokeswoman for the Home Office claimed, "EU citizens are our friends and neighbours, and we want them to stay in the United Kingdom, which is why we launched our groundbreaking EU settlement scheme." She said, "Those who do not have status under the EU settlement scheme can enter the United Kingdom for up to 6 months as visitors, visa-free. However, now freedom of movement has ended, those coming to work or study must prove they meet our entry requirements. We urge people to check the requirements before travelling." She added, "We expect Border Force to treat all arrivals with respect and consider each passenger's situation on an individual basis. The British public expect us to check that everyone entering the United Kingdom has the right to do so, and passengers may be asked questions to establish the basis on which they are seeking to enter the United Kingdom." Meanwhile, Meanwhile, it has emerged that UK ministers have told border officials to stop locking up European Union citizens in detention centres. After 48 hours of criticism over disproportionate and heavy-handed decisions to place EU nationals without the correct paperwork for entry into the United Kingdom in immigration removal centres for days, the Home Office has issued new guidance to its border force. It has advised border officials that, where appropriate, they should grant EU nationals immigration bail instead. This means passengers who are refused entry to the United Kingdom but cannot get an immediate flight home because of COVID travel restrictions will be permitted entry on bail conditions. A Home Office spokesperson said, "While international travel is disrupted due to the pandemic, we have updated our guidance to clarify that overseas nationals, including European Union citizens, who have been refused entry to the United Kingdom and are awaiting removal, should be granted immigration bail, where appropriate." The spokesperson said, "Now freedom of movement has ended, people from across the European Union can continue to visit the United Kingdom, but those coming to work or study must meet our entry requirements, and we urge them to check before travelling." The Home Office came under pressure to act after a succession of stories of EU citizens, including Italians, Spaniards and Bulgarians, finding themselves in detention centres around Heathrow and Gatwick airports, surrounded by barbed wire and terrified. One Italian woman who was coming to the United Kingdom to improve her English on a short-stay visit to her uncle, an NHS consultant in London, told how she was sent to what she thought was a prison at Colnbrook Detention Centre near Heathrow Airport. She was expelled from the United Kingdom before her uncle was able to advocate on her behalf. The immigration barrister Colin Yeo said the new government guidance was welcome as a short-term fix for the Home Office to stop automatically detaining people in the detention centres instead of putting them on planes. But he said it was not a long-term solution to the fact many in the European Union do not know about the new rules because they're not obsessed with Brexit. Luke Piper, head of policy at the campaign group The 3 Million, said it was a carve-out solution that did not address the arbitrary decision-making of unnecessarily detaining people coming to this country, which he said was a historical problem that can't be resolved by removing one group from its impact.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.